Welcome to this episode of the Listening Library of Beaver County, the podcast. Today we're going to talk about doing local history in Beaver County during the pandemic.
One of the things I've done is to help everybody. I have 8,000 followers on Facebook now. So I put a list of everybody's address, and I've been asking for donations. Now, as far as Little Beaver, we've got quite a few that have come in, and I'm hoping, hey, at $5, $10 to any of these organizations, because we've all lost our number. You know, the History Weekend is our number one thing for most of us, you know, just about everybody. They rely on the people coming in and donating during History Weekend.
Testing, 1, 2. It is my very great pleasure to welcome you today to the listening room.
You are listening to a production of the Social Voice Podcast Network.
You want to listen with your ears. Just have them do their job. Just keep your ears open and ready to hear new things.
Listening, giving a person a chance to speak, to share their story, to share their experience.
Are you going to hear me what I'm saying? Or are you going to listen to me what I'm saying?
It's really quite simple. Just listen.
Local history seems to be a straightforward idea.
History is his story.
And it's also her story.
What is history?
It is an account of past events in sequence of time.
The people.
The places.
And the events in all of our lives.
They know the people that grew up in Beaver Falls, the people that grow up in Southside. They know their history.
You know, we need the smaller organizations to keep that history alive and going, and we need the community members
to continue to support that, or else years from now, it's not going to exist.
I'm Kevin Farkas of the Social Voice Project, one of the co-founders of the Listening Library, Beaver County, and producer of this podcast. If you haven't heard of the Listening Library, I promise you, you will in coming months. We're an innovative, collaborative, multimedia archive of stories, photographs, and conversations that explore, share, and reveal Beaver County's historic heritage, social diversity, creativity, environmental richness, and community spirit. You know, we are living through historic, uncertain, and isolating times, but we'd like to help bring Beaver Countyans together through meaningful conversations and to talk about things that matter to our communities, such as local history. In our county, there are about 24 local history museums, heritage societies, and other organizations dedicated to capturing, preserving, and sharing our history. This is the stuff that public historians do. You know, those who bring history to life in museums, through books, in the classroom, and those who remind us of our past so that we can better understand our present and the future. For example, we know that Beaver County was hit hard by the pandemic in 1918. Like so many other communities across the country more than a century ago, we were hit by the Spanish flu in a big way. Hundreds of Beaver Countyans lost their lives, perhaps some of your relatives. What was it like back in the day? Did communities go into isolation and lockdown like we are? Did people practice social distancing? And how did that work out? Was it effective? What lessons have we learned from our past? We're going to explore this question a bit with our guests, all of whom, each in their own way, are important public historians doing local history, much in the same way Beaver Countyans more than a century ago helped preserve a record of events, images, and eyewitness accounts of their brush with a pandemic. How are Beaver County's historians collecting, documenting, curating, and sharing history in real time? It's an interesting question, I think, and it's one that our ancestors will ask of us somewhere down the line as they search through the historical record we've left them. As Little Beaver Historical Society's Dave Halowico mentioned in the beginning of this episode, Beaver County's local history organizations are really suffering through this pandemic, as major programs and events are canceled, fundraisers are canceled, and museum doors remain closed. How are these organizations going to survive if they're not open for business? The answer might surprise you. As we'll hear, some Beaver County local history organizations are adapting like never before to the technology of the internet, updating their websites, and using social media to keep doing local history during the pandemic. In fact, our discussion here was recorded over a group video service called Zoom. Perhaps you've heard of it or used it for your work or to keep in touch with family and friends. Our guest today will talk about how they're doing local history and keeping the lights on, so to speak, in their museums and programs through technology. And finally, we ask our guests to tell us how you can help them keep the lights on. Yes, you and me and all of us in Beaver County, we're all in this together. This is our shared history in the making. So to be good ancestors to future kinfolk and fellow citizens, we need to help support these local history efforts. You can find out how to do this in the show notes of our website, where you'll find contact information and links. Sending money is good. Money is usually good. And as Dave Halowico mentioned,
and I'm hoping, hey, at $5, $10 to any of these organizations.
And let's not forget volunteering. You know, even before the pandemic, local history organizations have been suffering from a critical lack of volunteers. So sending money and offering to volunteer are two things that you can do to help Beaver County's local history organizations not only survive this pandemic, but thrive through it.
And like everyone else, we're just sort of seeing what every day brings. And I don't think there's really a playbook for any of this right now.
That's Brady Kreitzer. He teaches history at the Community College of Beaver County and Robert Morris University. And he's an author of many books about history. He's also the host of Dispatches, the podcast of the Journal of the American Revolution. And Brady is reminding us that going through this pandemic for historians and everybody else is sort of a wild card. Here's another perspective from Aaron Cowan, an historian of U.S. urban and environmental history. He teaches at Slippery Rock University, and he teaches students how to document and interpret the history of Western Pennsylvania. And he's also the founder and co-director of the Stonehouse Center for Public Humanities in Butler County.
Like every professor, we're shifting modes of teaching and all that, and that's been a real challenge, I think. And a lot of our work in Aliquippa is with a group called Aliquippa Impact, which works with at-risk kids. And of course, most of their work has been suspended because of, you know, it all involves close working relationships, mentorships and things. I mean, I think they're doing some things virtually, but so that's on hold, but we've got a good foundation there for the future.
Larry Bruno Foundation, it's my heart. It's given back to my home in Beaver Falls.
This is Ron Main. He's chair of the board of the Larry Bruno Foundation in Beaver Falls. They manage a Hall of Achievement and History Center, provide scholarships to students, and promote the wisdom and successful attributes of coaching with the community as a model for achievement. By the way, the Social Voice Project produces the Larry Bruno Foundation's Magical Coach podcast.
We're trying to figure out how we continue to tell stories about how our local people have achieved in their lifetime.
I know, like Old Economy and in my organization, even though our doors aren't open, we're still answering emails and still doing queries and reaching out to people that have questions or concerns about history. I mean, even though I'm working from home, I basically am putting in a 5-hour day, 5 days a week. It doesn't stop. It continues. And all of the sites are pretty much trying to just stay status quo.
This is Brenda Applegate of the Beaver County Historical Research and Landmarks Foundation. Now, Brenda also manages the William Vickery Mansion. With the help of many dedicated volunteers, including Brenda's husband, Roger, he joined us in the conversation. The foundation is a central hub of a lot of Beaver County history, research, the collecting and archiving of artifacts, recognizing landmarks, and creating history education programs. For many years, Brenda has been responsible for holding together the Beaver County History Coalition.
They're all frustrated for two reasons. First of all, they're closed. Second of all, most of their volunteers are older and they're afraid to bring them back because of their susceptibility. But they're struggling and they're trying to do the best that they can.
Another significant local history organization is directed by Laura Lee Bernecki. The Beaver County Genealogy and History Center has been collecting the written history of Beaver County since 1971, documenting family surnames, births, marriages, and obituaries, local history books, maps, newspaper clippings, yearbooks, and church files going all the way back to 1830.
Yeah, we're closed just like all the other historical societies. We're trying to help our patrons via email and back and forth that way. it's a little difficult when they can't come in to do the research in person. And since we don't have any staff members down at the center, there's minimal that we can do to help them. And this is the time of year that our staff and volunteers normally do that work that you can't get done or it's difficult to do when patrons are in doing their research. So a lot of that's been put on hold as well.
Here's Brenda Applegate again.
We still have like Old Economy and Beaver would be having, and Southside actually would be having a lot of school tours coming up in May. You have Merrick that would be open now. Rochester, I know Michelle has been asked to do research and she can't even get into the building. And Beaver Area Heritage has lost a lot of their school tours and Garrison has been moved to August. And that's one of their major fundraisers. And I think that's a concern with many of the organizations that this is the time that they're having fundraisers and they're doing things to promote their site and they're not having the opportunity to do that. At Beaver County Historical Research and Landmarks, we're in the same boat. We've all are going to suffer the effects of not having the History Weekend, the first weekend in May. And I believe, Dave, your Darlington Days has been canceled.
Yeah, Darlington Days is canceled. The History Weekend is canceled. One of the things I've done, and it's to help everybody, I have 8,000 followers on Facebook now. So what I've done is I put a list of everybody's address as far as county history. And I've been asking for donations now. As far as Little Beaver, we've got quite a few that have come in. And I'm hoping that by approaching these people and saying, hey, at $5, $10 to any of these organizations, because we've all lost our number, you know, the History Weekend is our number one thing for most of us. Darlington Day is more so for us. But I know you guys and you know, just about everybody, Rochester, they rely on the people coming in and donating during History Weekend.
Dave Halowico is a longtime volunteer and board member of the Little Beaver Historical Society, which manages five buildings in Darlington, including the famed Greersburg Academy. Little Beaver also has a deep connection to local Civil War history and prehistoric artifacts. The Social Voice Project also produces the Little Beaver Historical Society podcast, one of the first podcasts of its kind in Western Pennsylvania. We'll come back to the question of what local history organizations are doing during this pandemic, but let's talk a little history. What is the history of pandemics in Beaver County, and what lessons can we learn to help us understand and endure today's coronavirus pandemic?
I did the 100th anniversary of World War I display at the museum, and looking into that, we found out, and I didn't know this, you know, how many more deaths actually happened from the flu that happened from the actual war. So what happened in 1918 is the majority of the flu cases initially were soldiers because they were in close contact, they were in the trenches, they were in camps. Okay. The war ends, the flu has sort of calmed down in all of the United States and Pennsylvania. All these troops came back from Europe, they had big parades, they had welcome home things. And they had a massive peak after, as you said, in October, and it because they brought the flu back with them. The social distancing thing sort of got pushed away, sort of like what we're doing now. They're talking about, you know, they want to push. Uh-huh. And we may see the same thing happen that happened then. We may see another huge peak of infection because we've sort of gotten complacent. Things are slowing down.
As genealogists go, everybody's family is affected by a pandemic or an epidemic. In my husband's family, when I was researching them, there was one family unit where within less than 2 years, the couple got married, they had a daughter, and they were all dead within a matter of 18 months. It's just heartbreaking. I actually went down to the center, which is closed, and went through the files to see what we have down there on the specific, like the Spanish flu and the different pandemics and what have you. And sadly to say, there's not as much there as I had hoped to find. The one that we have the most information on is the Spanish flu from 1918. And it's very, very sad to see how quickly it spread through Beaver County and the number of lives it took. People really were unprepared for that to come through the county. And I'm sure that everybody's family tree has a connection with deaths, you know, from that pandemic.
It's why it's so different now compared to the 1918 flu. With 1918, you had World War I going on. You'll see a lot in newspapers about that. Even midterm elections in 1918, you have a lot of talk. There's very little mention of the Spanish flu, unlike now where this has consumed our entire reality. Whenever we teach that time period, I mean, it may come up. You know, Woodrow Wilson was sick with the flu and survived. But, you know, with the nature of a survey course, we don't have the time to really get into it. But for me, you know, just to give you an idea, I grew up in Butler County outside of Saxonburg. There is a cemetery with unmarked graves that we all knew about growing up. We always called the Black Cross Cemetery. And there are untold hundreds. I mean, we don't know how many bodies buried there. And these were all Slovak migrant workers who died in 1918. My great-grandfather was a Slovak migrant worker. So it's sort of like ever present in our lives, as it probably was for them in 1918, but it never was. There's so many other world events going on. It was always eclipsed. And now as historians, you know, we have to, you know, deal with the fact that you don't have enormous amounts of sources on it or firsthand accounts of it just for those reasons. So, you know, one thing I will say, this could add, you know, to kind of what we're doing here. There is no possible way moving forward. I can't teach the Spanish flu of 1918, just given the world we live in and the relevance of epidemics and pandemics now.
There's so many comparisons between that Spanish flu and what we're dealing with now. The month of October from 1918 for both the Daily Times and the Evening Tribune from Beaver Falls, on October 26th, the newspaper said 160 deaths had been reported in Beaver County in the week. In double digits repeatedly I saw in the paper for people dying from the flu.
There's just not a lot of history about the pandemic. The war was the most important thing in their lives at that time, the Great War. And we, you know, but the pandemic actually, again, took 50 million people worldwide, way more than the actual war took. And the information age, we can look on the computer, we can look on our phones, we can, back then, think about it. News from the front and news from other cities took days to get, you know, by telegraph or whatever, and it was transcribed. The information age has made us, it's helped us immensely. I mean, we couldn't be doing this. I mean, could you imagine sitting here in your house with basically just maybe a newspaper or radio, and you're, all these people are dying, and you're like, wow, me, I can't even imagine. And I don't know if in the United States that the people can live like this for, you know, they're already, you know, going stir crazy after a month. They, back in 1918, they had no idea, you know, who was sick and who wasn't.
Here's Roger Applegate to talk a little bit more about how quickly the pandemic came upon Beaver County in 1918.
Yeah, the thing with the Spanish flu is it started in March of 1918, and it was mostly in the camps and in the soldiers' training grounds and things. Then they all left. They went over to overseas, fought the war, and it wasn't bad here. It really didn't get bad until, as he said, it came home. Then round two started in October, between October 1918 and January 1919. And then if a third wave hit in that spring, and it was nowhere near as bad. But 60 to 70% of the people that died of that 50 million figure was in the October-December period. And that's what you generally find in our newspapers, that single period. And when you look at that, you really get the impression that people didn't understand until it really got bad, because when it hit fast.
We know that Rochester Hospital was overpopulated at that time, and they went to the high school and had to use that as part of their infirmary.
They had a lot of emergency hospitals that were put into place. There was a tent hospital set up in Beaver Falls.
Right. Somebody would get the flu and they would die the next day. I mean, it was that mm-hmm. fast moving. And the strange thing about the flu of 1918, 1919 is it affected younger people, which tells you that the older people had probably already been exposed to it earlier in their lives. Evidently, it had been here before because they were sort of immune to it. Unlike this, where nobody has any immunity, as far as we know, back then, young people, children, people in their, you know, young, healthy people were the ones that died of the flu.
One of the things about the Spanish flu is that it's a little bit different than our current virus. It created something they call a cytokine storm. So what that means is people would get sick and it would be an overreaction of the immune system, right, which would destroy the lungs. It would swell and flood the lungs. So what happened was, older people largely survived. Like you said, it wasn't because they were immune. It was because their immune systems were weak to begin with, you know, it's the people with the strong, robust immune system that died, because they could put more into it, and they did put more into it. The leading dead from the Spanish flu were people between the ages of 18 and 35 and pregnant women. And that was because those groups had the best immune system, which means they had the best overreaction to the virus, which wiped them out. Older people and younger people tend to come out of it because they couldn't get enough of an immune response to actually kill themselves, essentially.
It was probably an H1N1 strain, which we've actually had in the past few years. With the new flu vaccines, of course, they can, you know, they can tailor them to that. So the N1H1 flu isn't as bad as it was then, because again, we've built up through generations, we've built up some immunity to it, but we've also have the vaccines. The herd immunity thing is going to happen here.
The 1918 influenza was U-shaped in the mortality rates. I mean, elderly and really young people had right. The highest death rates. It's actually kind of W-shaped. There's this peak around the 18 to 35, then it goes down, and then it goes back up on either end. It's a weird graph if you look at it. But yeah, I mean, and that's obviously a little different than what we're seeing here.
And I think it's also kind of amazing when you do talk to some of our older volunteers and people, their parents didn't talk to them about the flu at all. You know, they don't remember hearing about it. So it wasn't that important to them.
They were just glad it was over.
But it is kind of amazing if you go look at some of the YouTubes on the 1918. I mean, if you change the clothes, it could be an instant repeat.
A lot of the things that they did back then, we're doing today. Mm-hmm. Social distancing, everybody has to wear a mask. They even used quinine. And guess what else they used? Vicks VapoRub. That was an approved treatment for the Spanish flu.
Mother, his happiness is in your hands, particularly when he's sick. And with a cold, you want to be sure he gets fast, effective relief from his miseries. So here's wonderful news. Atom tracer tests prove Vicks VapoRub acts faster, works hours longer than aspirin or any cold tablet. Tests prove when you rub VapoRub over the area of lungs and heart, throat, back, and neck, where cold tension settles, VapoRub acts instantly, works in nose, head passages, throat, reaches deep into chest with a second breath. No other method of relief treats all three cold areas all at once. World's most widely used cold medication, Vicks VapoRub.
During the 1918 pandemic, Vicks VapoRub actually tripled in sales. The demand was so great that the company had to pull salesmen off of the road back to the North Carolina facility to help manufacture the stuff. Now, let's talk a little bit about how local history organizations are continuing their programming, continuing their outreach to their communities. I've noticed that a lot of organizations are turning to Facebook Live to connect with folks through history lessons, for example. Washington County History Society has something called the Laid Back History event, and McKeesport Regional History and Heritage Center have something they call Fireside Chats with Dave. Crawford County Historical Society has something they call 5 Minutes with County History. And just across the border in Ohio, Trumbull County Historical Society is aggressively using their website and social media. They have what they call the Sunday Speaker Series on Google Hangouts. And I've noticed that some organizations are doing photo sharing through social media. Ross Township Historical Society is doing this. And of course, Little Beaver Historical Society through Dave Hanawiko and some other volunteers are doing this in a very big way by putting a lot of their photographs online with captions and letting the public have an engaging conversation around those photographs. Here's Aaron Cowan to talk a little bit about the historical record and how his organization is actually engaging history in real time to create the historical record through the pandemic.
Right now, of course, one of the big struggles that historians are thinking about for the future is so much of what we create is ephemeral, right? It's text messages and it's social media posts and it's these things that are just kind of out there in the ether and aren't on paper that we can put in a box somewhere and pull out later, right? And so in 1918, I mean, you had Western Pennsylvania as a whole, these towns and cities were booming, right? I mean, you had factory towns, and you had the kind of really the, a lot of the peak, and particularly in 1918, I mean, you had wartime production, right? And so what that meant is you had a really robust newspaper record in most places, but, you know, even small towns, you know, Slippery Rock had a paper. I mean, my goodness, that's, and, you know, and half the pages are probably so-and-so went to visit her mother-in-law and had a very good time. And, but, you know, you are also getting the day-to-day life of all of these communities documented. And, you know, of course, we have some photographs, but, you know, not as many as, of course, we'd like. But the problem now is that a lot of those, as we all know, those small town newspapers are no more. They've closed their doors. So, you know, I mean, gosh, the Post-Gazette can barely keep things going in the same way. And so the day-to-day experience of our communities through this pandemic aren't being documented in the same way by media. I mean, and then again, we have so much digital. That's a big problem. We decide what's important in the past, right? I mean, we decide what counts as history. When the oral history movement really started picking up in the 40s and 50s, they're probably thinking about, let's interview World War I veterans, right? Or let's interview maybe people who went through the Great Depression, you know, and that counts as history. Interviewing people that year when a whole bunch of people got sick and died may not have seemed like something they particularly cared to document or thought was all that important. I mean, certainly some people did, right? And we do have some of those, but, you know, not as many probably as we'd like to have. One of the great things that is happening in this pandemic, really nationwide and to some degree worldwide, is that universities and archives and historical societies, lots of other institutions, are being really purposeful about trying to document the experience. So we got in on that act as well at Slippery Rock. A couple of weeks ago, we started an archive project. It's called Shared Voices, Shared Experiences. And it is really an attempt to capture, to allow people to share their experiences during this whole thing. So that can be anything from photographs, you know, to a written kind of journal entry. It can be sharing, you know, text messages with family members who you're concerned about, you know, really anything. So what we've set up is a website. The web address is slipperyrockcovid19.org. And, you know, we chose as our masthead a picture of the community and or our header here, a picture of the community and picture of campus, because one of the things we want to emphasize is this isn't necessarily tied to Slippery Rock University, right? It's we want to capture the Western Pennsylvania community that has, you know, some connection. We want the experiences of local residents of Butler, Lawrence, Mercer, Beaver counties, right? The kind of outside of Allegheny County, Western Pennsylvania communities. You know, we've got a page here about what to contribute, and it's really broad. So one of the things we want to encourage people is to think about, you know, what counts as a historical record. It's not just the official papers of somebody, or what if somebody had written a journal about their experience and put it in an archive, or somebody had taken photographs or those kinds of things. And so, you know, we've got lots of different possibilities. So really people just go and they say, contribute. What kind of thing do you want to contribute? You know, an image, is it a video, audio recording? Teachers want to submit adapted lesson plans, for example, or something like that. And then, you know, we've got a map of each one of these contributions so we can kind of see where they're spread around. But really, it's, and when you start browsing these, you kind of get a sense of this. So we do have some official university records, but we've got somebody, you know, submitted a picture of their church empty during service, right? Somebody wrote a blog post, you know, they shared just a little journal reflection about what their experience has been like. Somebody else found an N95 mask on the ground. So, you know, but really we're, you know, we're encouraging people to contribute anything that they'd like to. And this is not proprietary. The University Archives is working with our organization, the Center for Public Humanities, to collect this, but really for the community to use it. It's not going to belong to anyone. It's always going to be public. It's always going to be, you know, available to people. And so really we're trying to just provide a way that people can encourage organizations, historical societies, museums, that sort of thing. You know, if you'd like to point people there and say, hey, you know, share your story, and we can collect them by location. These are all the ones from Beaver County. These are all the ones from, you know, Butler County, whatever. I was out on a walk once somewhere and I saw somebody had written in chalk on the wall, you know, COVID-19 is real. Wear a mask when you go to the grocery store, do your part, you know, social distancing. And so I thought, well, that's a record. You know, the first rain that comes, that's going to be gone. So I took a picture of that, you know, and put it up. you know, we're just trying to document this as a service to the community.
It's very hard for us. We can't get to our sites. We can't get people. We can't. It's very hard. I mean, with the stay in place order and all this, I mean, I went out and got groceries today and there were 5 people in Aldi. Okay. I mean, I was really afraid, you know, am I going to get, you know, have to wait in line? There were 5 people.
Good thing you didn't go to Lowe's.
I saw the photos of Lowe's, right? But Kevin, doing these things is important. Just like, you know, the Veteran Breakfast Club things we did and all the military interviews that you and I have done, and you've done many more than me. This is an important thing. Digital media right now, I mean, where would we be if we didn't have a computer or a cell phone at the moment?
We're not just genealogy down at the center. We have a lot of files as far as Beaver County history and businesses, schools, towns, that sort of thing. And I do have a staff member whose job it is right now is to keep track of all of the newspaper stories and articles that are being published about this pandemic. And what we're going to do is put them into a spreadsheet and print them out, keep that in a file. But we're also going to keep the hard copies. We're going to put them in an archive box in case somebody wants that tangible copy newspaper to lay out in front of them on the table to look at, you know, in the future. I don't think that's enough. I think we need to be doing more than that.
We've already started that with the newspapers. I don't personally know anyone right now that has come in contact with the virus. You know, if that would happen, we would probably reach out and interview them.
I'm sharing photographs and I'm sharing some of the small stuff we did, you know, that we recorded, and actually sharing to the local Civil War history. I actually shared our recording of Soldier Come Home that we did at Merrick. So it's bringing these people in. And what's happening with the photographs? It's a really strange dynamic. People are starting not to just talk to me. They're talking to each other about, well, my dad worked there, or did you, you know, and then they'll say, my father worked there too. Did you know this? So it's creating conversations and it's creating more interest in history. It's creating more history interest online than we sometimes get at the museums.
We're finding that our Facebook page is generating a lot of interest. We were going through some of our archive boxes, found a collection of pictures in there, and there was 4 or 5 pictures that were taken from a parade route. We assumed they were from Ambridge, but we couldn't be positive that that's where they came from. So I posted them on Facebook. Hundreds and hundreds of comments on these pictures from people talking back and forth about the pictures, about the businesses and how they affected their lives growing up, and just generated a lot of memories, a lot of communication between people.
Can I just say a couple of things real quickly? First off, I really was thankful that Kevin invited me in, because I wanted to get a chance to meet people even virtually a little bit. And so I teach at Slippery Rock, I teach classes in public history and in digital history. And so in the future, when we are maybe back to something like normal, I'd love to offer the resources. I mean, obviously, encourage you to use the archive project right now, but what we can offer through the university that could help organizations, I mean, in terms of setting up digital projects. I mean, you can do some pretty, I think, progressive things without investing a lot. And you know, again, I'd be glad to support that and offer student help and that kind of thing.
I think that's it, the student help, because most of the people that are volunteers in all of our groups are older, and technology is not really something they have an interest in.
Wait, what? Let's hear that again.
Most of the people that are volunteers in all of our groups are older, and technology is not really something they have an interest in.
Now, this is interesting. A bit of a conundrum, really. If most of these local history organizations are staffed and run by volunteers, and if these volunteers tend to be older, and if older people tend not to be too interested in technology, what does this mean for times like these, during this pandemic, when technology is really a lifeline to the outside world? I think this pandemic has taught everyone, in a very swift way, that the internet is a powerful technology, nearly indispensable in today's world, and digital media such as photographs, YouTube videos, Facebook Live, Zoom conference calls, and even this podcast are all just necessary means by which we can communicate. The internet and digital media have revolutionized the world, the way we do business, the way we learn, stay connected with our families and communities, and it has changed the way we do history, even local history, right here in Beaver County. Perhaps no one in our local history community is more aware and more experienced than Ron Main of the Larry Bruno Foundation. In his other life, he oversees an innovative digital communications company that specializes in bringing technology to the classroom, things like internet networking and video conferencing. Questech has been doing this work for decades, led by Ron's unwavering vision and faith in putting technology in the service of something socially useful, such as education, and now local history. He has bold plans to incorporate internet technology into the operations and programming of the Larry Bruno Foundation.
We run over 65 school districts in Pennsylvania. We see that the educational element of this needs to be changed because the classrooms are not in session. Teachers are using online. They're trying to teach, but a lot of them are just giving out assignments. Kids give the assignments back. There's no real interactions like we are. Probably about 20% of our schools are ready with full online learning courses, projects. So that, I think, is where we're focused as a company. We're working hard to get the educators to use this technology because we see that is a need. So as a company, and we're focusing on developing this technology, getting teachers, it's really an intervention into training and actually making sure that all the kids have computers at home, but having teachers understand how to use that technology better. We see that's a major area in our point. Larry Bruno Foundation, we're under construction and just remodeling. We just put new facility, new lights, new floor, new paint. We're going through the development of the Hall of Achievement located in Beaver Falls, which will be a cultural museum of our archives of our inductees and achievers. We're building a cultural classroom. Our first course that we are designated and we're designing right now is going to be around virtual use of technology for the classroom teacher. So in time, probably will be open by early July to come in. And we want folks to be part of learning about this technology, how we use it, how it can be used better. And those classes will be offered to folks in that period of time. Plus, the podcast storytelling is going to be ongoing through that same event, same time period. We are working with Kevin to really start bringing in, whether it's remote or not, to bring in our experts, our achievers, to tell their stories. And we want to do that through storytelling, through archiving. So the museum, as we see it in the future, isn't just going to be an artifact. It's going to be a classroom, or we call it a cultural center, where we can sit down and talk to Jim Tressel, for example. And he's talking about the discipline in his years at Ohio State. We're going to talk to Joe Namath, who's on our board, by the way, to talk to us in live and then archive those so people can come in and watch them virtually, real time, or archive to tell us about his examples of teaming. We have 7 attributes to coach a culture. We've developed that through the experiences of all of our teachers, coaches, and learners. And we have a whole building a curriculum to be able to deliver that in sessions, kind of like courseware, so that if, Aaron, you want to become a culture coach, you would come to our classes either remotely, live, real time, and learn the 7 attributes as we have the curriculum being built for that. So you can go out and start small groups on your own and start teaching how you uplift a culture. That's kind of our vision. And certainly Kevin's been part of our vision, working with us on it.
I'm going to jump in because I was involved in some of the early recordings we did. And Judge James, we recorded Judge James. And it was, for me, it brought back so many memories because Judge James and my parents were friends. They grew up on Mount Washington. And a matter of fact, Judge James mentioned my dad's family in his talk on how it affected his life. So that history came back to me. I didn't know that until, you know, Judge James said, well, I was young and your dad and his brothers were on the Hill and I looked up to. And so Ron's right. We can change the way kids learn with the technology. And he's right. I mean, my sister's a teacher and my nephew's a teacher. And a lot of them right now, they aren't doing this. They're, like Ron said, they're just giving a student, here's your work for the week. Turn it, you know, send it to me when you're done. Yeah, that's learning, but it's not interaction. And, you know, we can stay away from each other physically, but mentally we need to do this.
Right. Our culture that we have to change is the educator too.
Yeah, right.
Dave and Ron are onto something. And given what Brenda Applegate said about the relationship between technology and those who run local history museums, I think we need to change much of the current attitudes and values public historians have around technology. This will require an investment in technology, digital media, and training. It will also require a shift in how we do local history. Historians who are embracing technology because of this pandemic will have to carry these efforts forward and continue using Facebook Live, history talks, recording speakers, video conferencing with communities, and crafting history displays and exhibits to include digital media, such as podcasting, which is a great way for a local museum to truly have worldwide reach. As a matter of fact, both the Little Beaver Historical Society podcast, the Magical Coach podcast with the Larry Bruno Foundation, and other history podcasts that the Social Voice Project produces have listeners from around the world. That's a powerful thing, only made possible through technology. Ben Franklin said, "Never leave till tomorrow what you can do today." We could talk all we want about the future, but today, right now, Beaver County's many local history museums and societies need our help. That's why I want to give our guests the chance to tell you how you can help do local history by supporting them today. Be sure to check the show notes for this podcast episode for information how you can contact and help each one of the organizations. Here's Dave Halowicko.
Well, since we lost both of our biggest fundraisers of the year, we lost the History Weekend and we lost Darlington Days. And I know it's a tough world right now. I know everybody's laid off and money's tight, but we all lost History Weekend. So any donation can be, anything can be mailed to us at Little Beaver Historical Society. And those donations go right to our operating costs. Even though nobody's there, we still have electric bills. We still have gas bills. So, the bills keep coming. We have a big expense, and I don't know when it'll happen, but Griersburg Academy is going to need close to $100,000 worth of work soon. So we've been putting money aside for that, but you still have the operating costs. I'm sure everybody in the county, and Brenda and all of us, can say the same thing. All these sites need cash inflow because they've lost the donations of people visiting. If you go to my Facebook page, I listed everybody, Ron, everybody's address is there where you can send a check or their Facebook page where you can ask them where to send a donation.
Well, like everyone else, fundraising and what have you, our bills still need paid, the electric bill, the gas bill, the rent. But I'd like people to come and see us when this is all over. Come on down and see the vast collection that is down there. See the resources that we have, not only for genealogy, but for Beaver County history. We were founded as the archives for Beaver County and local history, and there's quite a lot of material down there. During the winter months, we try to do the things that we can't do conveniently while we are open and during the busy season when we have a lot of patrons in.
I think, as Dave said, all of the historical sites are needing funding. Air Heritage does two air shows this spring that have been canceled. We're all paying the bills, trying to keep the doors open. Beaver Area Heritage right now is collecting things. So I think if you have anything that's related to the virus, that is unusual or unique, Beaver is collecting those things. And as Laura Lee said, we need people to come and visit us when the doors open again, not to be afraid, but to actually come and visit us and see what we all have. Many of us are still collecting items throughout this downtime. So we'll have new things to share.
The thing I think we would like from people is just to share their experience, to not assume that theirs is not important. That's all part of social history. The more records we have, the better for us to understand the fabric of people's lives right now. But I would really encourage history organizations to reach out to CCBC, to Brady, who may know students, and to myself, certainly. We're able to be a resource when we can. And then finally, I would encourage every organization to get good at digital storytelling. You know, a lot of times there's fear about putting your material out online. You know, there's anxiety about sharing things because you're afraid somebody's going to steal them, or that someone will misuse them. And or that, you know, if it's digital, then people won't engage with you in person once you reopen. And my experience in through the years and talking to people is that the more that you're open with your resources digitally and you're putting them out there, the more people engage and the more they're interested to hear more about what you have to say and what you have to come to your site. So I think we're entering a period where digital storytelling doesn't replace your organization. It becomes just a kind of a core part of what you do that really enhances and builds up the more traditional programming and research services and things. So I would just encourage people to keep doing that and try to develop one or two ways to do that during this time.
About this technology, my wife was doing a Zumba class, and the instructor would go to every site around the county and do Zumba classes. This morning, they had over 20 folks on Zoom. While she was doing the Zumba classes, everybody's in their home doing the Zumba classes. And it's telling me exactly what we're, how we need to be together, how we can be. We still need to be places together, but this technology, I think, needs to be learned by all of us. And we welcome you to visit the Larry Bruno to, when we open those classes, if you want to visit with us or be part of the messaging. We're integrating, we're about infusing the knowledge, because we're all about seeking and purveying knowledge to be more innovative. That's a part of our mission.
I spoke with a friend whose wife is an epidemiologist, and early on in this, and I said, you know, must be a heck of a time to be working in infectious diseases. You know, I said, we really don't have any many history emergencies. And he sort of said, well, this sort of is a history emergency. And that really kind of got me thinking, you know, that is the core of this. I mean, your experience is the record moving forward. So this is more for just the general greater good. I mean, if you feel something, record it, keep a journal, write something online, leave something behind, be good to each other, be patient, be good Americans, lift each other up, those kind of things. We will come back, but we have to take care of each other first, I guess.
This has been a community conversation about local history during the coronavirus pandemic in Beaver County. A big thanks to our guests today, Dave Halowico, Laura Lee Bernecki, Brenda and Roger Applegate, Ron Main, Brady Kreitzer, and Aaron Cowan. You can find this podcast on social media and our websites, thelisteninglibrary.org and thesocialvoiceproject.org. Be sure to check out the show notes for important contact information about our guests and how you can help their local history organizations. Remember, we're all in this together. And as always, if you like what you've heard, we can use your support as well. If you'd like to underwrite, sponsor, or advertise on this podcast, let's talk. I'm Kevin Farkas. See you next time at the Listening Library.
Because that sort of being seen and being heard and being made to understand that we matter in this world, that is one of our fundamental human needs.
So you out there listening, whispering, staring, I'd like for you to feel your thoughts. Know that they're not in vain. There is compassion existing. We're listening. I don't have all the solutions or conclusions, but I've seen the illusions and I've touched the real. And it appeals to a longing for peace. Ceaselessly, we've longed for the more in store, and I implore you, reach out.